Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody, and welcome to Resonant Frequency, the amateur radio podcast. My name is Richard, KB5JBV, and I am your host. Welcome back. We're back on air. Wait a minute. That's the wrong music. Turn that crap off. Why are you playing the wrong music? Play the other music.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is actually episode number 132 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And as you've already heard, we have Richard back on the show with us tonight because Pete went AWOL. We have no idea where he is, and Richard decided that he had some free time, so he's going to fill in. So, good evening, Richard. How are you tonight? Welcome back to the program.
Well, I didn't realize it was going to take so much free time, but here we are. We're on the air. We're international at this point. Life is good, and we're even talking about cleaning products and stuff. So go ahead, Russ. Doggone it, I done forgot what I was gonna say.
We've had such a trial getting this show rolling that I can't even begin to explain. But with Richard, we also have Cheryl. Good evening, Cheryl.
Good evening.
And we have a special guest co-host tonight. His name is Ben Schramm, and he is from Perth in Western Australia. Good evening, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Ross. And hello, everyone out there. And thank you for correctly pronouncing my last name. That's a clap to you.
I didn't really think there was any other way you could pronounce it. But
there'll be no clap giving. We're not giving a clap to nobody. No glove, no love. That's the way we work here. All right.
But you can't catch something twice anyway.
Richard, you can give Richard all the clap you want, just as long as you leave me out of it.
Hey. Hey. There's lots of grease where I work, so I have to be careful.
Well, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, we are actually recording tonight using Google Hangouts, which may or may not prove to be a nightmare. Whatever audio issues you hear are due to that. But we will talk to Ben a little bit as we go along through the evening. We have a few news stories that we want to get through, and then we'll talk more about Ben and Western Australia and didgeridoos probably. Or
I need me one of them.
Everybody needs a didgeridoo because that's the stereotype, right? There's probably only one person in 1,000 in Australia who actually uses one, but we all think everyone has one. You've got one?
Yeah, I haven't played it for a while, but...
Oh,
yeah, I've got one.
Can like go to wherever it is and bring it back and play it, that would be the most awesome thing ever.
Ooh, yeah, all right.
Everybody's full up on the harmonicas. We got to do something else.
Oh, a harmonica and didgeridoo duo. That would be amazing. Well, let's get this thing a rolling because with the exception of Ben, the rest of us are going to have to get some sleep here pretty soon. Still early morning in Perth right now. Actually, I guess it's kind of late morning in Perth right now.
What I said, he's got all day to mess with this. We're not so lucky.
All right,
Walking Dead, I need to watch.
Are you not caught up on Walking Dead?
No. Shush.
Oh, well, let me tell you what happens.
Shush. I'm still grieving Herschel getting his head cut off.
Oh, you're back a ways then.
Yeah, that's ages.
watching it on Netflix because we didn't have AMC, and now we're in a place where we have AMC, so I'm having to catch up.
So anyway, Cheryl found us a bunch of interesting news stories. So I'm going to start with the first one, and then I'll make Richard read a couple and make Cheryl read a couple. The first one is getting to know D-Star without buying a radio, which would be a great thing because I don't have a D-Star radio because I don't have any money. If you're thinking about getting into D-Star and are wondering just what you can expect when you get your radio or your DV dongle, but you don't have one yet, you can now find out what it's like by listening to live audio from the Victor Alpha 6 Echo Foxtrot Romeo Gateway. To monitor this without any D-Star equipment, you just take your web browser to the Edmonton Fire Radio website at www.edmontonfireradio.com. Click on the Listen Live link. You can also monitor on your mobile device using various scanner apps for Android, iPhone, or BlackBerry. Does anyone actually still own a BlackBerry? Is that like a thing? Depending on the app, you would search by location, then select Canada, Alberta, Edmonton, and then the VE6 EFR D-Star Gateway. And for those of you who already have D-Star gear, if you want to check out this gateway, you can tune your gateway to Reflector 30 Charlie, connect to it that way, and you'll be able to hear what it's like for folks to be on D-Star. Yeah, even if you don't have a radio, you can just listen to it via the web, which is kind of cool. I might go ahead and check this out.
I'm a little confused.
Why are you confused?
Are Canadians in the habit of setting the radios on fire?
I don't think that's what it means.
But it sounded like
Edmonton Fire Radio. Well, I'm guessing that's not what they mean by that, but they could. Maybe they just have really tough radios.
Or maybe they go through a lot of them because they're not working out and they have to fire them.
More fun shooting guns in the house. Yep.
It's getting there. Y'all talk about something. I'm on the verge of being in.
All right. Well, I'll talk about this because I've been getting my Doctor Who fix lately. I've gone back and started watching Doctor Number One, which is kind of interesting because I didn't get to see Hartnell back in the day because I wasn't born yet. So now I'm sort of experiencing it now. But there's a link between Doctor Who and ham radio, apparently. It gets a very brief mention in an article on making the music for the British Doctor Who series from the test equipment at the Radiophonic Workshop. The story is that the UK newspaper, The Register, had an article called Delia and the Doctor, how to cook up a tune for a Time Lord. And among other things, it describes the BBC's Wobulator, because time, you know, is wibbly wobbly. They use that to create some of the music for the ham radio, or not for the ham radio, for the Doctor Who theme. Basically uses a beat frequency oscillator, which is what the Wobulator is. So that's kind of cool. Ham radio helped contribute to Doctor Who. Awesome. I'm surprised he doesn't use ham radio. You'd think that would be cool technology for the Doctor to get into. All right.
He has a TARDIS.
He does have a TARDIS.
We don't have a TARDIS. He has a TARDIS.
Doesn't he have that little wand thing?
The sonic screwdriver?
Yeah, I guess that's what it's called.
Not a big fan of Doctor Who, I can tell.
No, not really.
Yeah, I've never heard it called that wand thing. I'm going to see if Cheryl's still awake so she can read the next story.
Just wait a minute. I just want to make this comment, and I just want everybody to know we should be proud of the people of Australia because Australians are the Texans of the former British Empire.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree to that.
They got cool animals. They even got this great big rock in the middle of the place. It's really cool.
Oh, Woolaroo?
We have one.
Yeah.
We have one like it here. It's called Enchanted Rocks.
I love seeing pictures of Uluru. I'd love to go there and see that for real sometime. I guess they call it Ayers Rock around here or something. I don't know.
They used to call it that, but no, under indigenous laws, they've changed the title to Uluru, or back to Uluru, I should say.
Cheryl, you want to read the next story?
Sure. A new commercial video service called the High Definition Earth Viewing, or HDEV, was launched by... Okay, now there's typing. Yeah, there you go. Launched from the International Space Station on April 8th on board the SpaceX Dragon resupply mission. The set of four high-definition video cameras are now operational after being installed on the external payload facility of the Columbus module. The cameras and electronics are enclosed in a pressurized box to provide protection to the equipment from the harsh environment of space. This is not the ham TV experiment and your screen will appear black when the ISS is in the orbital night. You can see the new live ISS video feed anytime at tinyurl.com/ISS-2-Earth. And this information will be in the show notes.
That's kind of interesting. I didn't even know this was a part of the ISS program. I wonder if they just decided to do it, or maybe someone in the chat room could speak to knowing about how this project came about, because I know nothing about it. This is the first I've heard of it.
Have you ever been to space?
I've been about 30,000 feet into space. Does that count?
Have you ever been to space? It's boring out there. There ain't nothing to do. Nothing.
Yeah.
You go outside, make sure things aren't falling off.
It's dark
and
there's...
clouds of yellow stuff and go back in. That's all it is. It's okay. Boring. They have to have stuff to do.
Probably. Although I don't imagine they sit there watching the cameras because they have a firsthand view of everything they're showing.
I think Ben will agree with me.
Yeah. And for the cost, I think it's not really worthwhile for the time being anyway. Although I would like to play zero-G soccer or football, as the international people would say.
Speaking of soccer, I thought this whole World Cup thing was supposed to be like 2 weeks long. Hasn't it been like 7 months now?
Yes. Longer when it was here in Dallas. They had draft screwed up for months.
I'm just wondering why Brazil hasn't won yet. I mean, come on.
They've actually just lost, I think.
Oh, great. Now they've lost. Well, screw it. I'm totally disinterested.
They 7-1. I'm not sure who they played, though.
Somebody better, clearly. So, anyway.
They were supposed to play somebody else.
So back to like things that matter. There have been new services announced for QRZ.com. There are some positive changes over there. The website database now fully supports secondary call signs. A secondary call sign is one which includes a slash plus a modifier as either a prefix or a suffix to the primary call. This feature is available to all QRZ users and can be accessed by simply editing your call sign or by using the My Account choice from the main QRZ menu, located under your call sign at the top right of the page. Also, unlike primary calls, secondary calls may be deleted by their owners at any time. So if you happen to be broadcasting from Thailand or something, you can create a local modifier and log it to QRZ for lookup. Another major change at QRZ concerns online logbooking, specifically Logbook of the World. If you're a Logbook of the World user, you can push your QRZ logs directly to Logbook of the World with just a couple of mouse clicks. And once uploaded, your QSOs in the QRZ logbook will be shaded with a green background indicating that they have been sent. A quick start guide for QRZ Logbook of the World operations is available at files.qrz.com/static/QRZ/LOTW_cert_guide.pdf. And of course, that link will appear in the show notes, so you don't have to like have been jotting down what I just said, which is good. Last episode, second to last article for the first part of the show is Emory Healthcare in Atlanta uses ham radio for backup communications. Emory Healthcare is among a growing number of hospital systems to adopt ham radio as a secondary means of communication. Hospital administrators and government officials took a lesson from Hurricane Katrina, which left some Gulf Coast medical centers isolated from the outside world as wired telephones and cellular communications failed. John Davis, Whiskey Bravo 4, Quebec Delta X-Ray, affiliated with the Emory Healthcare System, noted that some of the technology that's been around for almost a century is still relevant, and according to Davis, in addition to major hurricanes, the terrorist attacks of September 11th rekindled interest in ham radio as a public safety tool. I think that's pretty much the case around the globe, but it's interesting to note that places that you wouldn't necessarily associate with ham radio communications are looking at it as a backup method of emergency communications. He also said that the number of amateur radio operators is at an all-time high, where over 720,000 hams are now licensed in the U.S. alone. I believe we reported maybe a year or year and a half ago that that number was just barely over 600,000. So that's a considerable increase. Very, very well done, I guess, for all the new hams out there.
See, this is not surprising to me. I'm wondering why it took them so long to get on board, because most of the counties here in Texas have amateur radio built into the community, the emergency plan to cover the hospitals and the Red Cross and all the important folks like my house.
Yes, very important folks like your house.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all we really had for the first segment initial news stories and whatnot that have been sort of lingering for the past couple of episodes, because this show has been a freaking hot, sweaty mess for a couple, you know, weeks or months. I did put in the Etherpad for last episode a discussion point about whether or not we should go forward editing the show or just releasing it unedited, completely unedited. And after doing so, I sort of decided that doing that would be a really bad idea. But since Richard's here and he's the reason for the most part that the show needs to be edited, I figured, you know, we should let him pipe in.
Well, no, I'm unclear. I know that it would save a considerable amount of time in post-production if the show had to be unedited or was to be unedited or might be unedited or could be unedited. But do you want to leave some of the crap that goes on in the show in the show? I thought that the unedited version was part of the membership situation. See, I've been out of loop.
Well, it kind of was presented as the ability for paid subscribers to get the unedited feed, but since I've never actually created one, that's really not a perk at this point. And I'm not so much, I'm not so much concerned about things like language that the show might be edited for, as I am about things like the fact that we waffled around like crazy for 2 hours before we actually got the show rolling, the pauses, the ums, the ahs, and the ridiculous kind of things that just make the show almost intolerably long if it's not edited, as opposed to things that would otherwise be censored. Yes, it would save a lot of time in post-production for me having to go around and get rid of all that crap, but I think it creates a much better product. So I, you know, my feeling is to continue doing it.
You're the guy that has to do the editing. It kind of lays in your department. I really don't think you'd have a lot of folks hanging around too long if they were having to wade through 7 hours of audio for an episode.
Well, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't leave that junk in. But I mean, once the show got rolling, I wouldn't cut out anything in the middle. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. And since we have a listener of the show, maybe he could, you know, say what he thinks about that idea.
Yeah, I agree. Editing out like the... just like that, the ums and the pauses and the fluffing around trying to get my Skype to work is no one wants to hear that. But all of Richard's input, it's all welcome received.
What do you think about things that would normally be censored, like if it were going over the air, for example, in broadcast radio? Care or don't care?
Personally, I don't care. Because I'm Australian, I'm quite used to the swearing and banter, but others may be a bit more jaded against it, so.
I'm curious if anyone in the chat room has any input on whether they care or whether the show would be edited for content as opposed to just getting rid of the, you know, the waffling and general silliness. I think the consensus would be from the folks that are in the chat room that they probably don't care. And I don't know that we have many children listening to the show, so I'm not sure that it's really an issue. It would certainly save a lot of time for me if I didn't have to be concerned about things that Richard said, for one thing.
We have Harrison.
Yeah, what about Harrison?
We have Harrison.
We do have Harrison, but he's on the show, so he hears it anyway.
Just a baby. And I really hope someday he gets some.
He is a mono.
Oh, I don't think it's any stretch to think that minors are exposed to bad language. They probably use it more than we do.
That's true. Just play a game of Call of Duty online and you soon realize that.
Yeah.
And I can't help it. I get excited. So when I get excited, I say bad words.
Sometimes, well, the reason the Badger thing came about, I mean, other than the fact that Richard started the Badger thing, but the thing that came about using Badger to edit content was because it's actually funnier than hearing the actual words. I'm still going back and forth about it, but I think the consensus that I'm hearing in here and in the chat room is that if I decided not to bother editing the show, that it really wouldn't make any difference.
The audience may shift is the thing. Because amateur radio operators as a whole, and this is just the pinning down amateur radio operator side of it, amateur radio operators as a whole are a pretty conservative group. Yeah. Richard's out on the fringe most of the time. Of course, that's every aspect of being human. stretches out on the fringe of it. I'm sure that there are quite a few of the Linux side of it, the IT guys and stuff like that, that, you know, quite honestly, you probably need to put it out to the listeners of the show, the ones who actively download and listen to the show, the ones that show up in the stream, the ones that show up in the chat room, and kind of let them apply some guidance. It's like I said, you're the guy that edits the show for us, which kind of puts you in charge. It's kind of like I tell Brenda when she's cooking, you know, she be grabbing about never getting anything she wants, but she buys the groceries and she cooks the food, so she ought to be the one that gets everything that she wants. You see what I'm saying? And then we'll get you a maid to clean the house, but we'll have to clean the house first.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm not sure that the demographic of the show would shift radically if it came out unedited. And by unedited, I mean the stuff before the intro and after the outro would be chopped off and everything in the middle would be left intact. I don't know that it would change things very, very much.
Well, it's kind of like this. I left somebody in charge of the tiller because I had to go on my way for a while. I figured they could handle it. So I think you make a good decision on it.
I'll put it out to the listeners on the mailing list or something. And then depending on response, I'll either send out an episode, you know, unedited or two and see what response to it is and then decide from there. But anyway, that's way, way more than we need to talk about that. Well, that'll wind up as a poll question or something or an email to the.
One more idea. And I think Ben probably agree with me on this. Get the gal that cleans the house, since you're paying her anyway, get her to edit shows.
Yeah, I think I'll edit them myself if it comes to that.
Oh, good Lord. All right. So I assume we're going to listen to some of that wonderful, wonderful Creative Commons music that you come up with. And then we're going to come back and we're going to focus on Ben because he's been sitting over in the corner all bashfully. He ain't said nothing. He's being really quiet. And I really want to pick at him, so.
Well, good. Well, you can do that right now because I have no music for the show. We're just going right into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Why didn't you get the music?
Because I didn't have time.
Play that first music again.
What music again? No,
the what you played first.
Oh, you mean this? All right, that's enough of that.
Right, that you put steam in a man's stride, let me tell you. Okay, so.
All right, well, hey, since you're raring to go, so why don't you go ahead and kick off this thing?
Okay, so this time we're going to talk to Ben from down in Australia. He decided to come on the show. He actually paid money to come on the show. Now, if y'all want to come on the show, y'all pay some money too. In fact, all you got to do is address him checks to Great Badger of something. Anyway, so let's talk to Ben. Ben, it is a pleasure to have you on the show.
No, it's my pleasure to be a guest. Yes, it's great to be here. Finally chat to the greats of the Linux and the Ham Shack show.
Well, you know, the obvious question is, what initially drew you to Linux and the Ham Shack, and what has kept you here?
Well, really, I think I was just having to Google around, looking for Linux, Ham Shack, software, some sort of search query, and up it came, and I was like, okay, I'll check this out. And yeah, since then I've stuck around, and just the personalities of you guys have it's always great listening each and every episode.
Well, thank you. That's the deal. You were looking for Linux programs. I know when I started using Linux, which was not as far back in the far reaches of history as Rust, but when I first started using Linux and podcasts were just kind of starting out and that kind of stuff, it was really hard to find audio information on the different distributions and stuff like that. Is there a distribution you're partial to?
I have to side with Rust, and I just love my Debian. I did train myself up many years ago on Slackware, but no, I've just come such accustomed to the package manager of Debian and the stability of it, and really just its versatility of everything. So anything really Debian based, but for ease of use, I stick to Linux Mint for just quickly bunging on a machine and get it working.
Well, it sounds like we're in the same boat because, yeah, I'm a Debian fan. I went through quite a few distributions, some that don't even exist anymore. So, but Sousa and some others and ended up on Debian. And once I finally got the hang of it, it turned out to be my favorite. And I rode the what we call it around here, Ubuntu train for a while. They lost their freaking mind, and now it's got to the point of, yeah, you're right. If I want to throw something on a machine, get it up and running quick, throw Linux Mint on there. Now,
yep.
Everybody listening to the show knows I'm not as happy with Linux Mint as I could be, but it's the lesser evil. So And I mean, I even put my wife on it when I pulled her off of Windows, and she took to it like a fish to water. The only thing she was mad about is her printer wouldn't work right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So is listening to the shows, any of the amateur radio content pique your interest, or is it mainly just the Linux content?
A bit of both, really. I'm just starting off in the world of ham radio and all things radio frequencies. It's one of my hobbies is to collect hobbies, and so I'm starting off and just getting right into it. Very interested in the technologies and all things radio, really. It's definitely different, and it's refreshing to see for me to know, have new experiences and new things to learn, really.
Yeah, I've worked a lot of stations down that direction, and
okay.
I hear there's a lot of really happening stuff going on down there as far as amateur radio. But let's say you're using Debian. You interested in amateur radio? I'm seeing more and more actual software coming out for the ham radio side. In fact, right now I'm researching a program called Chirp, which is, if you've ever had any association with D-Star radios, there's a program out there called D-Rats. This guy writes D-Rats. He also writes Chirp, and it's a kind of a generic radio programming software.
Yeah.
And every time he can get his hands on a new radio, he backward engineers his way into being able to program the radio with Chirp, and it's turned out to be quite an interesting piece of software. Okay, now we beat the Linux and the amateur radio thing to death. We've done the obligatory thing. So, like, what do you do for fun, really?
I like to do a lot of things. I play video games, go on for a ride on my mountain bike when I can get the chance. Like you said, Linux, now ham radio, and sleeping, and drinking, and eating, and yeah, just everything, living life. And yeah.
Okay, I want to know if this isn't too impertinent. I've seen a couple of different pictures of you based on your various profiles, Google+, and so on, yeah. And I'm having a little bit of difficulty trying to pinpoint your age, and I'm going to take a stab at it and see if I'm anywhere close, because I'm kind of curious, and I'm going to guess, based on the picture that I'm looking at now, that you are 20.
No, you're quite far off it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure what picture you're looking at either, and I do know what you mean. I've got random pictures scattered around everywhere, so no, I'm actually 30.
Okay, well, you have a boyish face then.
The common thing for me to get asked for ID when going to a bar.
Well, you do look very young, so that's wonderful, I guess. So, as a 30-something Australian, what exactly do you do? I mean, what is there to do in Perth, Western Australia, that, you know, other than like play the didgeridoo?
Well, there's lots of beaches, if you don't mind the sharks. I do mean that in all seriousness.
Well, I've never been bothered by a shark yet, but, you know, there's always tomorrow.
No, yeah. Well, I live right near the beach, and during the summer, they got the shark helicopter on the lookout almost every day. And, yep, there's quite a lot of alerts. Been in the water myself, and they've called the siren a few times, so it can get a little bit scary at times.
All right. Well, let's go back to the beginning. Let me jump back to because Richard doesn't know how to interview anybody. He sort of jumped in at the middle. So I'm going to try and figure out what questions to ask you by asking you a question. Mm-hmm. You came to Linux. Well, we don't really know why you came to Linux, but you found our show because you were looking for Linux information and possibly ham radio information. We know that you're sort of in the process of getting your ham radio license. we know sort of why you listened to the show, because you Googled for us and we were there. Haha, yay. So you've stuck around. You don't have your ham ticket yet. You are, you know, at least on the surface, a Linux enthusiast. And yet, you somehow decided that it was worthy of your time and money to send us to Hamvention, an event that you most likely were not going to be at because it was halfway around the world. So why would someone who doesn't yet have a ham radio license, who doesn't really know us from anybody, who we really hadn't heard of before you decided to donate to our campaign, why would you do such a silly thing?
Well, really, it's probably on the side of more of the Linux. I've actually been using Linux since the year 2002. I just love it so much. Since discovering it, it's really just warped and ruined, I say, some careers, but opened up many other possibilities and other avenues, which has just been great so far. By trade, I'm actually a bit of a Linux developer at times. All things to do with Linux and radio systems at times. Basically, wireless systems and, modems with the GSM and 3G networks, for example.
Okay, Russ, great. You've outed him. He works for the CIA.
So does that mean you work in cellular networks or like for a carrier or something like that in IT in some aspect?
Yeah, I basically work for a company which we deal with onboard communication systems for fast-moving trains. So basically, you know, passenger Wi-Fi systems. So I deal with basically breaking and testing things, usually. I just have a bit of a modest touch with getting things to fall apart in my hands, as you know, with the problems we had with the Skype calls we were trying to do. But really, I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none. I got my hands in many honey pots, but yeah, it's really hard to describe what my whole role in the company is. But a lot of times I deal with coverage surveys, looking at the data and generating graphs to actually writing custom scripts for WPA supplicant to get it to work and see how it works. Yeah, it's all still very, like I said, I'm still very sparse with my skills, but it's a great learning for everything I do.
So high-speed transit systems, are we talking about land-based or air-based or water-based transit systems?
Mostly land-based with high-speed rail. Like I said, we deal with multiple cellular networks, bringing it into for the one connection, and then sharing it out to the passengers for the Wi-Fi, onboard Wi-Fi and entertainment systems, for example, which is a new product of ours, which we're trying to get up and running. But yeah, it's never a dull moment in my job, that's for sure.
Well, that sounds really interesting because I am personally a fan of rail travel, and rail travel, especially high-speed rail travel, seems to be very popular in every part of the world except for here. There are initiatives in several municipalities and several regions of the country for implementing high-speed rail travel, but we really don't have any such thing. If you want to get somewhere with any kind of speed, you use an airplane. There's a high-speed corridor, one that they're, I guess, trying to build between like New York City and Washington, D.C., but that's the only one I know of that's really in any kind of progress. But I hear about high-speed rail in places like, you know, France and stuff like that, where trains are a much more popular transit medium than they are here. So that's kind of cool to hear about. How extensive is rail travel in Australia? I mean, is it a primary mode of travel, like, you know, the opposite of what it would be here, or planes still the way to go?
No, it would have to probably be a bit like America. Like, there's not too much rail travel there. There is some rail systems within the capital cities, but if you want to go from state to state, there is a few lines, but they're not by any all means fast. They're usually it can take quite a few days just to get from, say, Perth to Adelaide or Perth to Sydney, for example. If you can even, I'm not even sure you can go that far from Perth to Sydney, to be honest. But no, it's definitely no fast rail systems in Australia at the moment.
They're talking about putting in a high-speed rail line from Dallas to Houston down the 35 corridor down here. My understanding, they purchased some of the land it's a lot of hilly territory, so they're going to have to really figure out the logistics to get the be able to run the higher speed rail. But they get it figured out. I've heard of several places where they were planning on putting high speed rail systems in. And thinking about it, Des, I always thought it was a good idea. I was like a teenager in my early 20s when they started running the one in Japan, and I always thought that was a great idea.
Yeah, the Shinkansen. It's if you ever go there, it's absolute marvel. It's so precise, so fast. You can get from one end of a country to the other within a matter of a day to even hours from city to city. It's, yeah, you get quite spoiled and come back home and you got to catch the bus. It's quite disappointing.
Yeah, I think where was the thing where they put in the high-speed highway? Was that between Austin and Houston?
Well, that I'm unclear of. I really hadn't heard anything about that. They're so busy screwing things up with tollways around here that you really don't hear much about actual highways and stuff anywhere else.
Well, I think they were saying that they were going to, or that they did implement some basically straight stretch of road between two cities in Texas. And I want to say it was between Austin and Houston where they jumped the speed limit to like 85 or 90 or something like that. That's miles per hour, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are places out in West Texas where they actually have 90-mile-an-hour speed limit signs posted. This I do know. I've heard from some of the guys I talked to on the radio here. While we're slowed down for a minute, and not to derail things. Ted in the chat rooms was talking about he'd like to have Ben on board as a tester for some of his software. Ted writes amateur radio stuff and a few other things, and we occasionally have him on to talk about his stuff because it's pretty good, stuff.
Oh, okay. Yep. Now and then, like I said, I've got many hobbies, and I am testing software with the Blade RF software-defined radio. That's that's pretty much how I've got into the ham radio things from now on. And yeah, I'm always more welcome to try out new stuff and software and give feedback, definitely.
Well, you know, we were talking about Chirp earlier also. I don't know if anybody in your circle of friends has picked up any of them yet, but right now the Chinese handhelds are really popular here.
Oh, okay.
Baofeng, the Waxon, some of the others. Chirp's written in Python, so anybody can like put their hands on it and work with it and play with it and everything else and modify it. And Dan actually needs help like that because he stays covered up most of the time. But anyway, go ahead, Russ. Yep. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. And I heard at Hamvention several folks who stopped by our booth mention the fact that when they buy a Baofeng radio, that they will use... That. I'm sorry?
I said, yeah, that.
Yeah, that. They will use Chirp to program it as opposed to the software that comes with the radio because Chirp actually functions better than the included software package for doing programming. This is especially true of the Chinese handhelds.
Okay.
Well... Yeah, the software that comes with it, nothing about these radios are intuitive to the American frame of reference. I'm sure they are in China, people using them there in Asia. It's probably simpler or it's more intuitive for them. But, yeah, you have to kind of jump through hoops with these things, and the software that they have for this particular radio that I'm working with right now is horrible. And that's one of the reasons I decided to get a copy of Chirp, which actually comes in a live CD, which makes it a lot easier also. You can either install it on an existing system or you can run it on a live CD. And either way, it works pretty well. It's a standard spreadsheet piece of programming software that you just plug in the frequencies and stuff like that, and you're off to the races.
Oh, great. I'll look into that because I have been thinking about purchasing a handheld as my first radio. Unfortunately, I don't really have the space to set up a station or anything. It'd just be good to listen in on things on the bus, I guess, and causing troubles.
The upside with these are that at least the one that I'm working with right now, I mean, it's $40 US, and you can add a program. Yeah, you can add a programming cable for $10 US. And yep. it's a dual bander. It's got 128 channels. It's worth taking a look at it anyway.
That's one thing as well. So I've been looking at the Realtek R832 chipset, TV tuner dongles, and how their capabilities of picking up, you know, amateur radio, AM, FM, and even in particular, I've purchased one on eBay. I'm still waiting for it. It cost me $10, but there's so much support for it to pick up the ADS-B signals from aeroplanes, basically the live tracking. Can't wait to get my hand on that and have a bit of a play. You know, all for $10, I get the dongle, a little antenna, which obviously I'll need to chop it up or modify it to get better signal performance. But yeah, that's what I love about it now is the software behind the radios is just so powerful. You can do things, so many awesome, crazy things for so cheap nowadays. It's really surprising.
Yeah, there's a whole RTL SDR project that's based around that chipset for Linux-based software for doing receiving with those specific software-defined radios. There's a whole that's actually one of the most robust parts of software-defined radio for Linux based around those chips.
Yeah, it's and like I said, the Blade RF, that's getting more and more support with software. And it's just becoming, so far, just so much fun to be able to just tune into really anything you want and define it. It's great.
Yeah, I did a search for Blade RF, and I found the nuand.com site, nuand.com, looking at some of their stuff there. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it started off as a Kickstarter campaign, so I chipped in and got my unit about a year ago now. And I've ordered the transverter board, which... again, adds more capabilities from 6 kilohertz to 300 megahertz, and the Blade RF alone does 300 to 3 gigahertz. Yeah, it's it's really bewildering to me at the moment because it's, you know, I'm still fairly new to the ham radio and everything radio based, but I love to dive into the deep end and just get myself lost and. Yeah, that's the only way you learn, really. Sink or swim.
Well, if you've been listening to the show, I mean, it's kind of a step away from software-defined radio, but it's D-Star, and we were talking about in the last episode about the guys from Northwest Digital Radio have created an AMBI chip on a daughter board for the Pi, which contains the transcoder and everything right on it, so you just snap it onto the Raspberry Pi, and you've got a D-Star rig.
Yes, I remember looking into that. I've got it bookmarked, so been toying with the idea, but I think I'll clear out a few more projects that I've got going before I'm taking on any more.
I know what that's like. All right, so part of this is supposed to be kind of like, you know, you get to come on here and we get to talk to you and you get to talk to us and you get to say stuff like that we might not ask you, you know, something you want to say, rant about, speak your brains about, et cetera, et cetera. Is there still really haven't gotten down to the reason why you wanted to be on the show? And I'm not sure there is a reason. I'm not sure there has to be a reason, but is there anything you wanted to just say for the hell of saying it?
No, I've almost said a lot of the stuff that I wanted to get across is make mention of the Blade RF and, the progressions of the software-defined radio itself, and, you know, basically just say hello to you two, or three, I should say, and, yeah, I'll think of anything else that pops into my mind, but, yeah, it's just a pleasure to be here, really.
Okay, so are you, like, shilling for the Blade RF? Is that it? You're, like, part of the project? And
No, I'm not a part of it, but it's something that I'm... deeply interested in, and I want to see it flourish, basically. Get more support, more people backing it and purchasing it and hopefully contributing, basically in all the spirit of Linux itself.
It sounds to me like you are a huge advocate of the crowdfunding model. It seems to be something that you've taken to.
Yes, I would have to say that. Because a lot of the times you can... As a backer yourself, you can have the input directly with the manufacturer and have that relationship, whereas, you know, you might have, say, X company that releases a product and goes, here you go,
this is our release, and as Richard said, people have had to go out and write better software to support their products and reverse engineer. It's better off really to work hand in hand with the manufacturer and the consumer, and overall you get a much better product, I find.
Does the company you work for, I'm not even sure you work for a company, I don't know that we got to that point, but in your work life, do you use open source as a technology, or is that something you came to on your own?
I did start off on my own, with open source software, and always thought, this is the path I want to take on. So I did work, with proprietary software, but yes, the company that I work with now is very much open source based. It's always a first option we try to go for is an open source solution and modify it to our needs if we can, and work with the developers itself, if that means throw them a few dollars to add a feature or not to our needs. And it's a model that I find is 10 times better than anything you can find commercially. And a commercial software is—it's often good, but it's not definitely not the first option that we go for, and personally as well.
Right, that's excellent. I know, my company embraces open source, but I often think they do it for not necessarily the proper reason. They do it from the cost perspective, not necessarily from the freedom perspective. I try to push both whenever possible. And I guess I can't really complain because on the one hand, they aren't doing it for the right reason, but on the other hand, they are doing it. Therefore, yep. You kind of take what you get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I've worked with companies before where it's all been closed sourced and I've had absolute terrible times. So I'm actually really lucky and fortunate to have fallen into this job, actually. It was quite a bit of a good luck and good fortune to actually have landed into it. So. Yeah, it was quite a surprise. Because I had pretty much previously given up in working in IT. Before this job, I was in the marine safety equipment industry, repairing and fixing marine life rafts and safety equipment. But got a bit tired of that and thought I'd have a poke around. And lo and behold, I stumbled across this job. Didn't think I'd get the even a acknowledgement, but they asked me to come in and do the interview. And next thing you know, I had almost a dream job.
Well, we should all be so lucky, because we aren't. so how soon are you going to have your ham ticket? Well, what's the plan? What's the roadmap?
The roadmap is get the Wireless Institute of Australia handbook, have a flick through that, and really, just try and get down the theory of things first, I guess, and try to team up with one of the local radio clubs. Unfortunately, due to my work commitments, it's quite hard for me to tee up any free days because it's often shifting around with my work shifts. But, I just got to make it happen, really, and be serious about it because I can't wait to actually get interactive and start calling around and having discussions on the air.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I can't wait till we have our first QSO with you or Richard or, somebody. I have to get my ass back on the air because that doesn't happen all that often either. All right, Richard, where'd you go?
Oh, I'm just sitting here reading.
You're not supposed to be reading. You're supposed to be interacting with our guest.
Getting my smart on.
Your smart on? Okay.
I thought you said your hard on.
But, you'll find amateur radio a lot of fun when you finally are able to get into it. And even at the lower license levels, you have access to digital stuff like Echolink. D-Star, a lot of stuff like that. And I mean, I'm kind of fuzzy on the license structure there, but I'm sure there's something very similar to our technician level license, which will let you do a whole lot of stuff, and a lot of people never pass that.
Yep. The first level is the foundation license, which does require to use commercial off-the-shelf products. And I think from then on, it's a bit like the technical or technician certificate that you guys have is the next step up is you can actually use homebrew equipment, which I think really I'm going to probably have to try and leapfrog the foundation and go for the intermediate level
just so I can use the software-defined radios, which of course means a lot more work on my behalf, but overall it would be much more rewarding. The only problem I can see is having an antenna where I live. It's I live in quite a suburban area, and I'm sure the council wouldn't really be too happy me putting up a big giant mast.
Well, there's ways to hide that stuff, though.
Yep, I have looked at that stuff. Yep.
Easiest way is with a nice, nice patriotic flagpole with an aerial right in the middle of it.
Well, I do have a few palm trees I could probably hide in amongst.
Well, even on the lower bands, you know, you look at the map and see kind of how Australia is set up. NVIS on lower bands would be work out really good. I mean, it's kind of close in, and you don't have a lot of dead space in between your ground wave propagation and sky wave propagation, so it kind of fills that hole in so there's not a gap.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people out in the, what we'd call them, rural areas. I hate to use that term that they beat to death here. It happens to be the name of a steakhouse. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they make their living there local and got amateur radio so they can talk into the more urban areas and do whatever they need to do that way.
I was just going to say that, you know, the geographical features of Western Australia in particular is rather flat, and we've got a very stable climate, and even like I said, now using the SDR Blade RF with the SDR console on Windows, I'm able to just pick up random repeaters at it around the 450 megahertz range, and it's amazing what I pick up sometimes just listening in using a simple rooftop 3G antenna that's supposed to be for a car. I'm just got that plugged in next to a whiteboard at work and picking up something, without any fuss.
And then when you add the computers to it, because there's so much great stuff for Linux to use with the radios. I mean, we talked about programming software a little bit, but you know, you've got other stuff for digital modes and stuff like that. And because Linux is the way it is, and here we are back to Linux at close to the end of our conversation about this. The great thing about it is you can always go in, program something up to make things work the way you need them to work on your radio. Most of the digital modes I run are all open source digital stuff. I don't worry about trying to pull in stuff from Windows or anywhere else. We use FLDigi, or I use FLDigi, which is a big chunk of the big software package here that actually gets sold for a fairly decent amount of money called Ham Radio Deluxe.
Oh, yes. And
then you've got other stuff like JT65. Olivia's starting to take off here, which is kind of an MFSK kind of mode over the air and that kind of stuff. And even, I mean, shoot, what you're talking, the area you live in is kind of like West Texas, kind of open, kind of flat, and that kind of stuff. The same suite of software that this JT65, that's a HF, it's a really low speed HF mode, comes out of. There's also one called WSJT, which is for meteor scatter of all things. Bounces signals off the ion trails from incoming meteors. When you got a wide open sky, it makes it a whole lot easier to do stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I do have a view almost of the ocean, so who knows what I can pick up from that direction anyway. Yeah, even though it's not good to bounce signals off the ocean, I know that, but you never know.
Hey, let me tell you, I've got some of my best contacts bouncing signals off water. So don't tell anybody and go ahead and do it. I just want to take this moment to say that the views expressed by Richard on Linux and the Ham Shack do not reflect the views of the management. If there's any problem, please send hate mail to hatemail@billxnotetaker.org. Thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. Thank very you. Good. Very CYA of you, Richard. So, all right. Well, as enjoyable as this has been, I think we probably need to move on to the close of the show. So I'll put it out there that if anybody in the chat room has anything they want to say to or ask Ben, go ahead and do it now. And Ben, if you have anything else you want to conclude with, you should probably do that now, but we probably should do our last story here and our outro and let you go about the business of your day, because it's almost a new day for the rest of us.
Yeah, just one thing I'd like to make comment. Cheryl, I think a few weeks ago you did the April Fool's joke, and that got me thinking. I think you should actually start a segment to do Cheryl's recipes, because often I find myself struggling to find new ideas for food and cookings, and I'm sure a lot of other people are as well, so yeah, take that on board, I think, and that can be your contribution to the show.
I wonder if she went away.
Yes.
I had to go clean the house. The maid's coming.
Well, she's still in the chat, but she may be trying to ignore the rest of us. I'm not sure.
Yeah, she's probably just ignoring that.
Well, you might get your wish. If she wants to do a recipe segment, that I think we can include it. I don't see any reason why we couldn't.
It'd be Linux in the kitchen.
Kitchen in the ham shack. That's what we want to do. Hey, I'm all about food.
Ham in the kitchen, something.
Well, I hope she comes back, because she's supposed to do this next bit.
I'm back.
Oh, you're back.
I left you a note telling me I'm going to go start some more laundry.
Oh, okay. Well, did you hear Ben's comment?
I heard something about Cheryl and cooking or recipes, and that I was shutting the dryer door at that time. So
yeah, I told him you probably had to clean the house because the maid was coming.
Here is the deal. Since you've been giving me crap about the maid thing all day, I decided to go ahead and strip the beds so she could remake them tomorrow. I now have laundry piled down the hallway in the house, and I'm trying to get done so I get the beds removed. Because she won't be here long enough to do all the laundry. She would, but she won't be here long enough to get all that done. So I would have to come home from getting the dogs groomed tomorrow to face big mountains of laundry in my clean floors. And I would prefer not to do that.
Okay, well, that aside, Ben's comment was that you should have your own recipe segment on the show. So do you want to do a recipe segment on the show?
I think you'll lose listeners.
Oh, I don't think so. He's actually requesting it. He's a listener. He says you should do it.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, there's a couple of people in Hamvention that mentioned it, too. So, you know.
Well, see, there you go.
They wanted to know if I had a website with recipes or something on it. So
the listeners demand.
Okay, well, there's been a format change to the show. So next episode, you can expect Cheryl's Recipe Corner. All right. Well, thank you, Ben, for your generous donation, first of all, and for, coming on the show and being a part of this. And it's been fun. We've really been glad to have you.
Yeah, no, it's pleasure's all mine. I'm glad that you guys were able to go to Hamvention and spread the word and the love of Linux and radio combining. And yeah, so hopefully you can converted a few more people to ditch the Windows boxes, at least.
I think we have. I think we've done really well, actually. Our campaigns to sort of get more people into it. I've been sort of hitting the social media a little bit harder and pushing stuff out, and we've seemed to be getting a lot more interest. And I noticed that our downloads per episode have gone, in the last 3 to 4 months, have gone from 1,500 to over 2,000 per episode. So
wow.
I think we're doing pretty well.
Congratulations, that's good. Yeah.
I actually think at Hamvention because a lot of people walk up and say, okay, so what are you here for? And we explain what we're doing. And a lot of people will say, do you have, Linux on a disk or something that I can buy and take with us? And we're like, there's a pile of disks right there. Grab one and go. There were a couple of people that actually came, they picked one up on Friday. They came back on Saturday and said, I tried it last night and I liked it, or I tried it last night and I ran into a couple of problems and here was the problems that I faced, and we were able to show them or tell them how to fix that. So I think probably every year, we we convert more people over. So at Hamvention. So
that's good to hear. I'm glad, and it was all worth it just to hear that. So excellent.
And we didn't like attack you too badly. I hope Richard didn't like put you off or anything like that.
No, not at all.
So when did you start?
Pleasure to speak to the great Richard.
We didn't ask you. Sorry? When you started listening. What at what point?
Oh, I think it was about episode 108, 109.
Oh, so you started listening after the Richard. So you're not even sure who Richard is.
Well, there was quite a while where I had no idea who this Richard guy was, and often you guys would feature one of his messages on the answering machine. But I've gotten introduced to his customs in the last few weeks or so. So, no, it's good.
Well, excellent. So again, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for fighting through the technical issues early on and hanging out long enough to get this done. I really appreciate it, and can't thank you enough for your help with the Hamvention.
No, that's great. Not a problem at all. It's been a pleasure.
My bash meter was going off. Were y'all bashing me?
Yes, we were.
Yep.
Oh. Okay, as long as I know that it's working like it's supposed to.
Yes, your alarm is functioning properly. All right, well, with that, we need to move on. I have one more story. Since we don't have any music, we'll just sort of jump right into it, unless Richard wants to fake that we had music again.
I vote no.
No? Okay. So, again, I need to give thanks to Cheryl for putting in all of the news items for this show, because I've been too busy with everything else to get that done. So we've had some great content in that regard. And this last one I just wanted to throw in here because there have been some changes to rules regarding licensing approved by the FCC, specifically to hams in the United States, which is what the FCC's jurisdiction is. And I'm not sure I want to read this whole thing, but I'm going to try and summarize. And then you can go to the FCC's website or to the ARRL's website and get in the full details. But the FCC says that the public interest will be served by revising the amateur service rules to grant partial examination credit for certain expired amateur operator licenses, to permit examinations to be administered remotely, and to permit amateur stations to use technologies that stations and other services are already permitted to use. In this decision, the FCC will make it a bit easier for hams whose licenses have expired to get back into the service, which is a great thing. That's a good idea. Should have been done earlier. This is by granting written examination credit for test elements 3 and 4 to holders of expired licenses that initially required passage of those elements. In the same action, the commission refused to give examination credit to the holder of an expired certificate of successful completion of examination. The FCC has decided to continue the requirement that 3 volunteer examiners be present at amateur testing sessions. The report and order says that allowing volunteer examiners and VECs the option of administering examinations at locations remote is warranted, and notes that as far as back as 2002, the National Conference of Volunteer Examiner Coordinators endorsed experimental use of video conferencing technology to conduct licensing testing. The FCC declined to address the mechanics of remote testing as they will likely vary from location to location and session to session. Specific rules spelling out how to administer exam sessions remotely could limit the flexibility of conducting these sessions. And they also said that the FCC has adopted an ARRL proposal to authorize certain types of time division multiplexing access, TDMA, emissions for permanent use by radio amateurs. The Bureau had granted a league request for a temporary blanket waiver to permit radio amateurs to transmit emissions with designators FXD, FXE, and F7E pending a resolution of a rulemaking partition. In issuing its final decision on the matter, the FCC stated that those commenting strongly supported such a change and noted that such a modification to its rules is consistent with the basis and purpose of the Part 97 amateur service. So if you want more details about that, I'm sure you can find all the information about rule changes at fcc.gov or ARRL.org. I do have a few little bits of feedback that I'm just going to run through real quickly. I don't really have time for you know, too much discussion. Some of these are coming through on Twitter. We're actually getting feedback from tweets now, which is nice. I've got that contest running where as soon as we get to 500 Twitter followers, we will be giving away a Baofeng HT to some lucky listener. The push has actually got us from 323 Twitter followers when I started to 416. So we're only 84 away. So if you're on Twitter and you hear this, go ahead and, you know, tweet that, get people to follow us on Twitter. And as soon as we hit 500, then somebody's going to win our radio. And the new followers have started giving us feedback by tweeting, which is kind of cool. Especially cool because the feedback is only 140 characters or less generally, so it's easy to get through. Let's see. Here's an email I got from Joel McLaughlin. He, am I going to forget his call sign? I am. W3RAZ, maybe? That may be somebody else's call sign. I probably shouldn't have said that. Anyway, Joel was up at Hamvention. He visited with us while we were there. And he's commenting on the statistics we mentioned about attendance at recent Hamventions. And he says, back in the day, Hamvention booths were basically told by Hamvention staff that they had to be open the full time of the show. They don't do that anymore. Many vendors will shut down early, hence the reduced population on Sunday. And we definitely see that. And we, I tend to start packing up a little bit early on Sunday, but by the time I get packed up, we're generally there until the show closes anyway. So, but I do see a lot of empty spaces on Sunday, and I'm sure that does contribute to a lower population on the last day of the show. But as he says, that is what it is. So we also got a tweet from at Fuzzy Conley. He says, regarding the FL Digi update, check out app-pinning. It allows you to update individual packages from different repos. This was in response to a question we had from someone trying to install the latest version of FL Digi on a particular Debian system where that version wasn't necessarily in the repositories. I didn't investigate this app-pinning option to the apt package manager or to the dpackage overlay called apt, but apparently it can allow you to install different versions of software from different package repositories by flagging them that they should be installed from a particular place. So that might be something for someone to investigate if they need that kind of functionality. We also got a message from Randy at Kilo 7 Alpha Golf Echo, K7AGE, who says, Pete, thanks for the nice comments on show number 130. So thanks to Randy, K7AGE, for the props to Pete, who we may hear from again someday. We're just really not sure. So if Pete ever comes back, we'll let him know you said something. And then we had a message from Peter, OK2CQR, which we interviewed three episodes ago. And he said, regarding his HamQTH project, yes, HamQTH has automatic import of FCC and VE call sign databases. He also imports a few more, like our local callbook. That would be the Czech Republic's local callbook. But I have to do it by hand. I have never developed anything for Firefox or Chrome. Maybe the author of the QRZ extension for Chrome could make small changes and point to the HamQTH website instead. This is something that I actually want to look at myself to see if I can make a similar plugin, a similar browser plugin for doing direct call sign lookups from them to HamQTH as opposed to QRZ, because I'm not a huge fan of QRZ.com since they started limiting access to it by login and password. So that is pretty much all the feedback we have. And then we come down to the social media roundup. And now that Cheryl is no longer putting stuff in the dryer, she should be able to read these, eh? Maybe.
Maybe if I can get my iPad
to cooperate.
Mute. Yeah, to cooperate.
So. Okay. All right, and we have a huge long list.
I'm up and running.
Yeah, so have fun with this.
All right. Well, to start it off, in the donations and subscriptions category, we have Doug Jones that did yearly, Steve Conklin was monthly, Jonathan Spriggs was yearly, Scott Pettigrew was monthly, Jeremy Hall was monthly, and David Smith was yearly. On Facebook, Rafael Beraldo Jan Anderson, Paul Sullivan, Richard Pryor, Chris Stiegel, Belgian Pen Pal, and Deb Hutchinson joined us on Facebook. And if I massacre anybody's names, please forgive me. I'm from Missouri. On on Google Plus, we had Josiah Ritchie, Chris Justice, and George Stratton. And here comes the big long Twitter list. Stitcher Radio, Jeremy L., Greg N., Snake Eyes _ Sam, Heil Sound, Rob Payne, Blind Kangaroo, W7ND, Amateur Radio Club Gemunden, Chris, Steve Lawrence, Socket Winch, Southwest Ohio DX, Ron K5XK, James Newman, Wayne Purjon, Brian Arsenault, Richard Clark, Captain Daggs, W4DDM, David Smith, Peter Holzick, Ronald Hemingway, Thomas Adsett, Tim Sutton, and Dutch Ham Radio Club Station. There was no people that joined the mailing list, YouTube, and there were no merchandise sales this time.
All right, that was a huge Twitter list. And I think Twitter is not reporting to me all of the people that have joined. So I think there were some people probably left off of that list. And if you were left off of that list, I apologize, but I don't get notifications of everybody. However, the Linux in the Ham Shack account does follow everybody back. And we do follow and monitor your tweets, especially if you tag, you know, you hashtag or you at mention LHS podcast. So we do see, you know, your mentions and stuff like that. And we appreciate all of the follows via the various social media networks and via Twitter. And just remember, as soon as we get to 500 Twitter followers, we give away a radio. So somebody's going to get one. Thank you for getting through that huge long list. Hopefully we keep getting huge long lists of new people subscribing to the show in the various ways and the future downloads and so on and so forth. And unless anyone has anything else they want to say by way of wrapping up the show, I think it's time to do the outro. Please check out our website at http://lhspodcast.info. Think about becoming an LHS ambassador. You can visit our website for upcoming events and information on how you can represent Linux in the Ham Shack at a nearby LinuxCon or HamFest. You can email us at info@lhspodcast.info or leave us a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. All hate mail is routed to Harrison at hatemail@lhspodcast.info, and he doesn't get nearly enough of it, so you should send him some. Please subscribe to our mailing list. A link is on the website. If you're looking for merchandise for Linux in the Ham Shack, we have new shirts with new logos. You can check them out at Cafe Press or Printfection, www.cafepress.com/LHS podcast. or www.printfection.com/LHS podcast. You can also help the show by clicking on the sponsored ads on the right-hand column of the homepage. Every click sends us like a half a penny or something like that. It doesn't cost you anything at all. You can listen live to the show every other Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Central, unless we have technical difficulties, in which case it will start at 9:45. Which is somewhere around 0200 Zulu Wednesday morning. Our recording schedule and countdown timer to the next episode is on the website, as is all the information about our program. Thank you to all of our listeners, donators, subscribers, feedback providers, quasi-live, past, present, future, and in alternate dimensions. We appreciate each and every one of you. You've been listening to episode number 132 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And I'll actually send it from between the peaks in the pine forest of north central Arkansas back down to the slightly faded and slightly rotting cardboard box next to the river somewhere outside of Mesquite, Texas, where Richard will say something like this.
Hey, it's not very witty, but doggone it. Thank y'all for letting me take some time on your iPod this time around. We'll see y'all in the near future. I want y'all to know I went through that entire thing without saying, watch over for new episodes of Resonant Frequency, the amateur radio podcast, coming in August. Check out our website at www.rfpodcast.info. Oop, stroke's kicking in.